wanting to concentrate on New Jersey because of their clean energy efforts, but it sounds like that's their main focus now. But I still would like to know what they're doing on Long Island and whether they. It's always bugged me that the cross sound cable was supposed to work two ways, and we always hear that Connecticut needs help in the wintertime for heating stress loads, and Long Island needs help in the summer for all the vacationers that want air conditioning. So it seems to me right for some kind of sharing agreement between Long Island and Connecticut through the cross sound cable. And it's not even clear who owns the cable and whether PSEG is part owner of the cable or any of those kind of. So they didn't talk about that at all. So I
Okay,
don't
well,
know.
they suggested that perhaps they will respond to those questions in their next iteration of the document. So let's give them a little chance. And then, I mean, I'm not sure what this has to do with environmental soundness of New Haven. Does it have to do with the environmental soundness of New Haven?
Well, it's a huge plant on the harbor,
Okay.
and
Okay.
it's right next to the sewer plant and East Shore Park and the bicycle trail that's supposed to go in and
So you'd rather not have it if it's not doing anything. That's what you're saying.
Well, it's not running very much, and I remember years ago when the peaking power plants were being negotiated that some of the people were commenting unofficially that it might be one of the plants that's closed, because we don't need it. So that's why I want to, if ISO doesn't need it, then what is it doing there? I understand the peakers are needed, but they don't need that huge unit one thing. But anyway, that's all.
I'm reading this a little more, and their answers are a little weird. So I think the megawatt hours I quoted earlier, I think were for their three peaking gas turbines. The gross megawatts, which I assume they mean megawatt hours, they were at 52,000, 41,000, and 54,000 2016 through 2018. 2019 they dropped to 16,000. 2020 they dropped to 14,000. So it seems like there's a pretty good drop here. I mean, if the trend continues, in the usage of the large New Haven Harbor Station 1 plant, which is the old plant. So that's not surprising. It's old and inefficient. We kind of knew that.
Yeah.
So is this going to end up being another English station that needs a toxic waste cleanup?
I mean, I think that the three newer plants presumably don't have really anything toxic in them because they're very new, so they don't have, PCBs and asbestos like Harbor Station had, or English Station, sorry. Harbor Station, I think was built in the early 70s, if I remember correctly. So, presumably they. I'd have to check all the timelines. PCBs is probably less of a concern. You don't have the 120 years of generating plant that you have at English Station. So I think
Okay.
less of an exposure there, but I obviously don't know exactly what's in their plant.
So, Lynn, is it that your concern is that there's going to be a big unused hulk sitting on the water that nobody is going to take responsibility for, basically?
My concern is that they're selling it, and whoever buys it may decide that they want to run it at the permitted capacity, So,
Okay.
I mean, they combined all their permits so this past year, so they're no longer having to do separate filings for the Title V permit. So, they definitely wanted to include the peakers with the main plant and not keep them separate. So I just think that the city should be aware that they're planning to sell it and that, we should be interested in who buys it and what they're planning to do with it.
So,
Okay.
If you see me looking frustrated and looking at and trying to look at another screen, it's because this morning one of my power newsletters sent an article about another cable that goes across from Westchester that's having problems. And the article talks about there's, you know, how there's these five cables going across, and it's starting to talk about the problems, but then every time I try to read it, I've been selected for pay a dollar and get 5 months subscriptions. I keep trying to reload it so I can read a little bit more, another sentence. So I have no idea, and I'm contemplating whether that dollar is worth it to find out what's up with these cables.
Okay, Giovanni, what do you think the chances are that the buyer of this these plants will try to run them at capacity?
Basically what you're trying to ask me is whether I can predict the future energy markets in Connecticut, and I can't. I probably wouldn't be working for the city if I could do that. I do love working for the city. I'd be here anyway. Who am I kidding? I don't think PSEG is not running them out of, either some sort of neglect or some sort of internal factor. I think it is really the fundamentals of the plant. I know the peakers themselves, I think, have some pretty strict limits on them. I don't remember them exactly off the top of my head, but I don't think you could just suddenly fire the peakers all year round if you wanted to. That being said, there could be a catastrophic event that causes all these plants to run very often. If there's a significant loss of a lot of generation in the ISO New England region or in Connecticut specifically, I think you could see it. You see what happened in Texas. So, with the energy prices there, those are the sort of times where these plants would run full bore all the time, right? I mean, that's when the price really rises. So the way that the ISO New England operates is that they have a price stack where the least expensive plants are at the top of the stack, and those are the ones they call first. And as there's more power needed, they go further and further down into the stack, and each of those plants is more and more expensive. And so when you need a huge amount of power, that less than 1% of the year, power is very expensive. We as residential consumers are insulated from that, but people on the wholesale power market, then for those few hours on that day, that's when the peaking plants in New Haven operate, and that's also when the New Haven Harbor Station 1 operates. So right now that pricing scheme happens pretty rarely, less than 1% of the year. If there were some sort of event that caused that demand and that pricing scheme to happen much more often, then we would all see both higher prices and a lot more runtime on these plants. I think the fundamental physics of the plant, especially the old one, isn't going to change. They're not suddenly going to make it a whole lot more efficient. It's set up the way it is. It's an old technology for a power plant, so that keeps the price down. I think the real exposure we have is this thing running a lot more if there's suddenly a bunch of plants that are knocked out or some other big sort of unpredictable event happens.
And so if that were the case, would New Haven make money in taxes or revenue or something else? No.
Okay. No, we make the tax simply on it sitting there. So whether it's running or it's not,
Got it.
So okay. One thing that could be an issue is if it sells for substantially below its book value, the new owners will come in and say, look, there was an open market. This is the price we paid. This is what should be valued at for tax purposes. And for those of us who are paying property taxes, that actually could be a bad thing.
Good point, Kevin. how do we avoid that?
You can't. I mean, property taxes are supposed to be based on fair market value. If you have an open market and two parties agree to pay X, pretty much that's what it's worth. And I think the new owners would have a good argument saying, look, we came in with the top bid. We paid X for the plant. That's what the plant's worth. It would be as though someone bought your house and for whatever reason, the prices had plummeted, which is not the case now, which is a good thing. The sales price is a pretty good indication of what the market value is.
Okay. So is there, are these power plants able to keep up with new technology in generating power, or are they stuck?
To some extent, I think Giovanni got to this. There are tweaks you can make to fossil fuel plants that can make them more efficient and make them more profitable. But they're tweaks. I mean, you're not going to change the fuel the plant uses or what's called the heat rate by a substantial amount. And so, I mean, you're not going to be able to suddenly double the efficiency of this plant. And going back to what Giovanni was talking about, the stack, that means it's probably not going to be running all that much more often.
Okay. I was just wondering if maybe it could be made very much more attractive to a buyer if there were a way to, you know, keep up with the times. But okay, I guess not.
Well, I think quite frankly, an unintended side effect of what we did in 2008 was precisely that. We pushed them to be able to run the main plant up to a certain level exclusively on natural gas, which was something they couldn't do. Natural gas prices then plummeted. And quite frankly, we probably forced them to do an upgrade that then put them slightly ahead of the market. And they were probably able to run that plant more than they would have otherwise. You know, I mean, it is what it is at this point. No, none of us could have predicted that at the time. But interestingly, I think we probably did some good, quote unquote, things to the economics of that plant for its owner. Surprisingly, not what I mean. Okay. You know, it's, hey, you live and you learn, right? I mean, it's right. That's the issue with predicting the future of these prices. So, you know, on the current trajectory that we're on, we don't expect these plants to run much. You know, they seem to be declining. That can obviously change, you know, either in a heartbeat with some sort of catastrophic event or if there's a real fundamental change in the economics of the market.
I mean, one of the fundamentals is were Millstone to shut down, that would change the market dramatically. And, you know, I don't think that's likely to happen next Tuesday, but could it happen a year or two from now? Who knows? And that would change the economics just entirely.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. Okay, so Kathy writes in the chat, she thinks we're more vulnerable to power disruptions due to future early season heat waves during shoulder months when plants are more likely to be down for maintenance. Yeah, good point, Kathy. Okay.
Yeah, so unlike Texas, you know, having and we're pretty cold proof up here, yeah. But it's more the use of air conditioning that is. So anyway, I think that, as storage ramps up, we'll also be able to make our grid more resilient. So hopefully that'll ramp up sooner rather than later.
Okay. Lynn, does this basically satisfy the part of the discussion about PSEG that they answered? I know you still have questions about Long Island and the cables, but do you have anything else we need to go over?
No, thank you, Giovanni, for coming on the call and answering that. It's,
sure. You know.
Okay.
I get into the weeds with this stuff, I'll be honest.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you, everybody. All right. So I'm just going to go to new business quickly because there's only one thing on it. And I just wanted to mention that on the news after a tragic murder recently, I saw a whole group of people standing outside doing a tribute to the murder victim by releasing balloons. And there is a state statute that was worked on by Mary Mashinsky that you can only release 10 balloons at a time. Balloons are a detriment to the planet, to wildlife, to the environment. They get stuck in trees, they choke sea animals, they do all kinds of bad things. Anyway, after I saw that on the news, I emailed a few people and I got an immediate response from Maritza Bond saying that the health department would try to get the word out that people should not be releasing balloons. So I'm very happy to report that that was something that the health department immediately took to heart. And I thank them for doing that. And I like balloons myself, but balloons are not good for the environment. So let's make sure that we are not encouraging people to release them. And I don't know if we have to let every store that sells balloons and balloon tanks in town know that there's a state statute. But anyway, that's what I will say about that. Anybody else want to make any comments about balloons? I know I'm Debbie Downer. Sorry. If not, we will go on. Oh, Iris?
Yeah, just graduation season. I know that in Amity, I heard from a neighbor that graduations, they like to do a balloon ceremony. And I think the high schoolers, maybe we could drop leaflets at the high schoolers that the kids, you know, showing animals that are suffocating from balloons, maybe they kids could pick it up.
I don't know. That would be good. I mean, maybe somebody at the state could let the high schools know that this is not an appropriate thing to do. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway. Okay. I didn't know they did balloon releases. I know they send balloons to people's houses if you pay for them. They attach them to your mailboxes. Do they do balloon ceremonies too?
That's what my friend, her daughter goes to Amity High, I think it's Amity in Woodbridge. She said that that's their ceremony, and she's dreading when her daughter gets to graduate, which would be 2 years from now. If how could she, you know, break this tradition? So okay. She asked me like 2 years ago, but you know, I could forward that information to her if that is helpful, giving her a back.
Yeah, that would be good, and I think. Sorry, Giovanni.
I would just make the point that as important as it is to not release balloons, I think this is a good time to remind ourselves about the context in which we work on environmental issues. You know, a murder is obviously a very tragic event in a neighborhood. I've got four kids. I can't imagine those parents, for example. And, we just finished the Botanical Gardens of Healing. Chris, you know, was a great part of that as well. And seeing the pain of the parents and such, as much as I understand the need to worry about the balloons, and I get that, I do think we have to remember the context that we're in and, be also sensitive to a society that, you know, I think we have to make sure we worry about all the different aspects to this. So I just wanted to express that.
Apparently they make biodegradable balloons, so maybe we should advertise those.
Yep.
For these types of things.
What is a biodegradable balloon?
Searched for it and something came up, so maybe we'll have to see how long it takes. But I know that biodegradable is not like a...
Right. It means perhaps that in an anaerobic digester that heats something up to 140 degrees for 10 days straight, it might be biodegradable. Maybe. I don't know. I definitely think we should come up with alternatives to balloons and fireworks because we don't need to wreck the planet while we're memorializing people or celebrating. Anyway, yeah. I will get off my soapbox now and thank you for pointing that out, Giovanni. You're correct. We need to put things in context. And we will go on to committee reports, I think. Energy. Kathy, what do you have to say about energy?
Not much. I've been kind of deep in the weeds with I Heart My Home. Which is a program that works with individual homeowners and renters and tenants. And so I could talk about that, but I really, you know, but that's an NHS program. So I've just been in the weeds with that. So.
Okay. Which is a good thing because it's saving energy.
Yeah. And if you ever want a formal report on status, we've just finished 1 year. And so we could give a report at some point, but you know, I don't think it's appropriate to talk too much about a program that's of my employer's.
Yeah. We'd be happy to see statistics if you want to put them out at some point. We can share them. And yes, we appreciate all the work you're doing, trying to make every house in New Haven more energy efficient. And hi, we've been joined by our junior member. Welcome, welcome, welcome. thank you for coming. Okay.
On a side note, Laura, with regard to energy.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. As you might have seen in The Independent, the city is thinking about substantially rewriting the zoning ordinance. And I've been talking with city plan staff about ideas for incorporating sustainability generally, including energy efficiency in the zoning ordinance. And I'm looking forward to great things.
Good.
I'll let you know what happens.
Okay. Thanks. We will, as you know, support you on all those things. If you want a letter from us, you'll get it. Okay. Thank you, Kevin. Okay. Anybody? Well, Iris, do you want to talk about water besides the slight deficit we're in? Anything else to report about water?
Just to emphasize that starting the spring with below normal, I did not know that. I thought we were flat, that we were okay. So starting with below average of rainfall, not great, but we'll wait. You know, in May, the official drought committee of the state will get together and hope we don't have to worry for another droughty summer. But I don't know. I don't have a prediction.
Okay. Well, thank you for continuing your work with the state drought committee, and you know that is very important work. We appreciate your doing that.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see. Anyone have anything to say about transportation? Okay. Well, we already talked about a bike trail. Yes.
There's a big meeting about electrification going on right now. So they started about a half an hour ago.
Electrification of transportation.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. Yes. We'll monitor that. Okay. Good. And yeah. All right. Thank you, Kathy. Let's see. How about, well, I don't have anything to say about soil. Does anybody else have anything to say about soil at this point? Okay. Parks. Kristen, you got anything to say about parks?
No updates from me about parks, no.
Okay, great. Thank you. I know the people who are working on the Kensington Playground issue are still working on it. For good, for bad, or whatever, they're still working on it. Lights, anyone have anything to say about lights or noise? Well, I can tell you that the leaf blower dislikers have been very active. We have met, we have been reporting leaf blower incidents to the health department, to the environmental inspectors. And I recommend that everybody who hears a leaf blower and doesn't like it takes down the name of the company that's doing it, the address at which they're doing it, the date and time, and report it to the health department. I think the health inspector in charge is Brian Winnick, W-N-E-K, at newhavenct.gov. And if you can't find him, you can always find me and I can add the incident to my list. I sort of keep a list. So, and they just hired a new inspector to inspect leaf blower incidents in Westville. And what they do is when you report a leaf blower that's making too much noise, they call the company and ask what model of leaf blower they're using and find out whether it meets with the decibel level legalities. And I don't quite understand how that works because I thought you wouldn't be able to hear them with your windows closed in the back of your house from the other side of the street, but apparently that's not so. And anyway, yes, Iris?
So I just wanted to ask the committee, so I wrote a letter and my husband agreed to sign, that we both sign it, just to, sorry, to hand out to my close neighbors, sorry. So Dr. Karen, I can't say her last name.
Dubanek.
She said that she lives on my street. She said that she'll sign it. I'm just asking if anybody technically has advice how to do a local petition, like, cause just have one letter and have sign or clipboard, or just have five people sign it and then hand it out. Cause we have a small coalition in my street that I think would sign. Anyway, if anybody has experience or ideas, I'm open.
Well, you know, we're working on drafting a resolution to express our displeasure with leaf blowers. And also Doug Housladen suggested that we update the leaf collection ordinance. He seemed to think that there would be a way to make the leaf collection ordinance deal with leaf blowers. So we're going to try and work on both those things. So
okay. Yeah. We'll try both ends. We'll see what works. Okay.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So we talked about materials management. And now I'm going to go on to turf, by which I mean artificial turf, the kind that Yale has put down on acres and acres of soil in New Haven after digging up 18 inches of topsoil. And they've been watering the field hockey field behind my house. I have noticed them watering it today, 2 days ago, twice, one day last week. It's amazing to me that plastic has to be watered. And I know that the reason they have to use water is that they are the maintenance of these four layers of plastic requires all kinds of pesticides. It requires detergents. It requires antifungals, antimicrobials, and herbicides. And it is a tragedy to me that in the middle of a pandemic, when we are having a slight rainfall deficit, they are using municipal water to water a plastic field. I don't know if that bothers any of the rest of you, but it is so distressing to me. Anybody? Okay. Well, I know my neighbor Jeannie is also distressed by that fact. And Jeannie has her hand raised. Here we go. Go ahead, Jeannie. We can't hear you. Jeannie?
I'm so sorry, everyone.
It's okay.
I'm only seconding what Laura is saying. I just had my second jab and I'm so under the weather, which I think is supposed to be a good thing. But yeah, it's really awful. I mean, just this week, they have been turning the water on again and again and again. And so I concur. And when I'm over this, I hope to do something about it. Thank you, Laura.
You're welcome. Okay. So now I'm going to go on to the lawn chemical report. And the lawn chemical report, it's a sad thing this month. We have had True Green applied barricade to a lot of lawns in Westville. We saw lots of those nasty little yellow pesticide application flags pop up in yards. And I emailed True Green and they emailed that what they used was barricade and it has prodiamine in it, which is a substance that is banned for sale in New York. And I'm just devastated these people can't think of something else to use instead of such toxic things to care for people's lawns or not care for them. And after our last meeting at which we had a state epidemiologist give us a PowerPoint presentation on the potential dangers of pesticides, I emailed the PowerPoint to the health department asking if the city health department could put it on their web page, and I have not heard back. And then I emailed it to the Livable Cities Coalition, asking them to share it with all the neighborhood specialists. I didn't hear back from them. And I emailed it to Diane Dorsey at DEEP, asking her if the pesticide people there could share it with all the licensed pesticide applicators. And she said they don't have the resources and that all the licensed pesticide applicators know most of this information anyway. So I tried. Let's see, what else can I tell you? The Monsanto Roundup and Dicamba trial tracker notes that Monsanto has still not completed a final settlement for its now $11 billion class action litigation over Roundup. And there's another $2 billion in Roundup cases going on. And there's a new trial date set for July 19th because this action is still not settled, which is just tragic. But I've noticed that no one's advertising Roundup this year on TV. I don't think. I haven't noticed any. And I've noticed the ads from lawyers who are encouraging people to contact these lawyers if they've been exposed to Roundup. So it's kind of sad what has to happen for things to get better.
Can I just interrupt?
Yes.
Sorry. The alarm is, I think I'm, am I going crazy or is there someone's has an alarm going off?
No, no one has an alarm going off.
Okay. Maybe it's someone of my neighbors. It's really annoying.
Sorry. Sorry. Maybe it's a car outside your window or something, or maybe it's your phone.
Like phone. It's maybe not my it's phone. Phone. My phone's on here.
Oh, sorry. None of us hear it. I'm sorry. Okay. Let's see. I have been trying to get the pesticide application records from Yale for the year 2020, and they declined to give them to us. Karen King of the Yale Office of Community Engagement told me that I should ask DEEP for them. I did ask Diane Dorsey at DEEP. She says she can't access the pesticide application records from 2020 because they are all working remotely. One more reason these records need to be digitized, which for which there is a bill going through the state legislature. But I think it's really awful that Yale does not have to share this information. When commercial pesticide applicators are asked for the information, they have to share it with people who ask, but Yale doesn't. And that seems to me that it's really not fair because we in New Haven are exposed to a lot of pesticides, especially herbicides that Yale applies to property on athletic fields and the golf course and grounds on other Yale buildings or around other Yale buildings. And I want to know what we're being exposed to. I think we have that right. Let me see, what else? Oh, so there's an issue with Upper Westville homes that were tested, had soil and water tests done, and it has taken me a month of people saying, people at DEEP and other people saying, we don't know anything about it, to finally get someone scheduled, an engineer come to discuss the results of these tests with the homeowner. I've not been granted access to the test results, but it's clear that somebody knows something they're not telling us. And I personally think that as the taxpayers who are paying, the homeowners who are paying $12 per year for the crumbling foundations fund to fund the repairs for this, these houses that have compromised foundations due to water damage, we should be entitled to see the test results, just as we know why the foundations are crumbling in the other parts of Connecticut and why we're paying for those to be replaced. And anyway, I also noticed that Senator Chris Murphy has just asked for federal money for the crumbling foundations situation in addition to the state money. So we're going to be double taxed on the money to fix this problem. And I think we should find out what's causing it. And anyway, I think that's all I have to say about that. And I want to know if the council wants us to write a letter in support of the bottle bill updates, because I I don't know whether you support it. So those who are on the council, if you can let me know now, if you have a reason for supporting the updates or for not supporting them, that would be great. Kathy, Floristine, Iris, Kevin, anybody have any?
I'm fine with moving forward with that. I mean, the bottle bill is outdated, both in terms of the amount of money collected and in terms of the beverage containers that are covered. So I'm fine with trying to expand it.
Okay. Yes, Iris.
Well, is the update to have the, I'm not 100% sure, because is it supposed to include glass and wine or to not the update?
Not right now, but it's going to up the redemption fee from 5 to 10 cents. I know you want a quarter or 30 cents. We're doing the best we can.
Yeah.
Some change is better than none.
Yeah, well, okay.
Okay, so Iris, you know what? You can read about
the bottle
bill and let me know. Floristine, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with her. I'll read more about it, but I'm for it if they increase it to 10 cents. I'm for it. But I'll read more and get back to you on that.
Okay. Sorry, I should have forwarded something about that to everyone. I figured you all got it. Kathy, what do you think?
I'm for it.
Okay.
I'm for us supporting it.
Okay.
And sending a letter.
Okay.
I have a question about it.
Yes.
In terms of plastic versus non-plastic recyclables, because plastic is problematic recycling because it's not really used and it's whatever, we know why plastic is bad. But then there's like the extra caveat that like if the aluminum and glass were to go up by to like 25 cents, then the 12 pack of Coke or whatever would end up costing a lot more if it was made of aluminum than it was in the store for the consumer. So they might sell more plastic. And I'm just concerned about if there was going to be a difference between the redemption on plastic versus the redemption on any other material.
I'm pretty sure it's whatever container you buy those things in. Whether you buy soda in plastic or aluminum, it's the same redemption fee.
Yeah. And that's been the way it has been since the beginning. Back when it started, it was actually more glass than plastic. But I don't think anyone has talked about having differing charges based on the materials. One of the things is that the grocery stores and the package stores complain about how complex it is to do this anyways. If we were to have separate charges for separate materials, it would complicate their lives.
Yes. And basically, we need to make it as streamlined as possible to make sure people at least try to comply. And separately, I thought the whole region of New England was working on a minimum recycled glass content for wine and liquor bottles. So I hope they continued to do that for those kinds of glass bottles. I think, while nothing is going to be perfect, and while we definitely should perhaps get people less used to purchasing single-use containers, one-time single-use containers, something is better than nothing, I think. I know Gary Winfield, our state senator, or some of our state senator, was not in favor of this bill. I phoned and left word for his legislative aide to see if he still doesn't support it and why. But I think the bill is going to go through whether or not we support it. So the thing for the Environmental Advisory Council is basically, do we want to go on record as being behind this legislation along with all the other people who are supporting it? And I don't really care one way or another, but if you want to, I think this week is the time we need to submit a letter supporting it. It already got voted out of the Environment Committee, and now the state Senate has to vote on it. So I don't know. Look, I don't use that many single use containers. I try to use as few as possible, but I just want to know whether you think that it's important, whether this is an issue that is important for the Environmental Advisory Council to speak up about. And if you do, you can let me know. And I think Kathy, do you have the stuff in front of you about the bottle bill? Because if you don't, I think I can find it somewhere and I can just email it to everyone so you can tell. Sal, I'm wondering if you have a bent on the bottle bill.
No, I don't have anything on that. But I think it's time maybe your group submits a letter to the Board of Alders asking for a public meeting on recycling in New Haven. It's a subject that needs to be addressed because our single stream state is no good. We're spending more money on our trash than the taxpayers should be paying for. And I think it's time for us to have a public meeting and start the dialogue, to start a conversation and see what we can do. I'm not going to say it's going to happen overnight, but it's a conversation that needs to start in our city and for other cities. It's the state dropped the ball on garbage and they try to kick the can. They try to use American Waste to fill the gap, but we need to start talking about it. That's my opinion on that. I'm hoping everybody would like to get on board and we start having public meetings on it.
Okay. I thought we were not allowed to legislate by city, that it was only the state that's allowed to legislate about garbage.
Yes, but we as a city can then advocate to the state.
Okay.
We have to start somewhere. The state doesn't want to touch it. The state's afraid of it because they don't know what to do with the garbage. That's the problem. And that garbage is going to come back to bite us bad.
Okay. Yes, Lynn?
So I've been attending the CCSMM meetings.
Thank
which
you.
I don't think New Haven's on there. I'm not representing New Haven. I don't think anybody from New Haven is on there. But the commissioner is actually engaged with, I think there's like 85 towns that are now members of this coalition, and she's challenged them to come up with ways to reduce their trash. And they're responding well. And it seems like New Haven is like Brantford is doing all of this amazing stuff and New Haven's doing nothing. It's like, I don't know how it works, but it seems like the city and the authority. So there's an authority and then there's the city. So the city collects the stuff, but then the authority treats it like a business. And if it's not profitable, they're not interested. So it somehow, you know, needs to, the dialogue needs to bridge that, whatever is going on. And why isn't New Haven participating in the CCSMM proposals that are exciting, actually?
Dawn, do you know why the city is not participating?
I don't. I mean, waste kind of falls within the Parks and Public Works Department. I imagine could be a staffing issue. I can talk to Giovanni more about that and see if there's a role that our department should play.
Okay, well, maybe we should ask Jeff Pesco-Solito and Becca Bombero about
it.
And maybe we should definitely do what Sal wants and request a public meeting about garbage, because I think that's a good idea. I will say that New Haven has issues that are completely different from these 85 towns in that we have many more renters and a much more transient population. And so we have to find different solutions than they do. And, you know, because we have such a transient population, it's hard to educate the people here about what to do with their trash and different things and where, how to dispose of what. And yeah, I get it. Sal, I think it's a great idea that we start trying to solve.
But is some of this conversation about not having a place for recyclables to go? Is that what we're?
No, it's about people not knowing what's recyclable, not recycling properly, about single stream recycling that doesn't work, about people not being able to get to the recycling and the transfer facility to get stuff there. All of those, all of these issues, all of them.
Yeah, I just think we're in an unfortunate place, I think, in the country, right? That if you, even if we recycled perfectly, there is like a shortage of places for recycling to go. So that's also a bigger.
Yes, but we can do things like recycle properly. And if we do things like separate cardboard, which is actually saleable and not contaminated by putting it in our blue bins with wet glass containers that break, then, you know, we can sell the things that are saleable and we can recycle shoes and textiles properly instead of throwing them in the garbage. There are just many things that we can do. Yes, Iris? So,
Kathy keeps trying to say something.
Oh, sorry. Kathy, go ahead.
I'm just thinking that maybe a good first step is to invite Jeff Pescasolito and Becky Bombero to one of our meetings and really start to talk to them about this, because I don't know how much either of them are engaged in you know, the, like how much of their mental energy do they spend thinking about waste compared to other aspects of their job, you know? So maybe by putting them on the spot a little bit, I mean, we know that Pierre thinks about this stuff all the time, but maybe by putting some of the other city staff on the spot for their, I mean, you know, maybe that's something that we can do gently to get the conversation started.
You know, we have already had discussions about waste management at our meetings, and this is Jeff Pescasolito's whole job. I don't really need another environmental advisory council with the same 20 or 30 people. We do need a public meeting. Sal is right.
I'm sorry. I didn't. Okay. Yeah. A public I'm not opposed to a public meeting. I just meant like, I was just trying to think of like.
We already hosted a training with Cheryl Baldwin. We did this for years and it doesn't.
So
us up to speed does not help.
No, I'm not saying to put us up to speed. I'm not saying to get us up to speed. I'm saying to push on Jeff Pescasolito and Becky Bombero that they get up to speed, that they actually hold the public event.
Okay, well, we can request it. It's easy enough to write a letter if you don't mind signing it. I think that would help. I don't want them at another meeting.
Look, at the end of the day, the Board of Alders fund whatever's got to get funded. So if we're not educated, and that's the point, it's not my colleagues are not educated, it's something that's not talked about. When it comes to green is not talked about, especially in the Black and Brown neighborhoods. They don't talk about green. They think green is a somewhere where it doesn't, but green is important to every living person in New Haven and in the world. Green will benefit us, save us money, but we have to have a conversation with the board then the way we can mandate some type of resolution telling them we want something done in the next couple of years to where we're going to go. That's all. That's what I'm just saying is I just want to start a conversation, but it's got to be a public meeting and it can't be from me requesting it. I think it should come from the public and then we need the public to support it and advocate for it. So it's we're not going to solve the problem tomorrow. This is
so Sal, do you mean like sort of like the way that the climate movement people pushed and then got the climate task force set, you know,
correct,
like some process like that?
Yes, but we have to start somewhere. You get what I'm saying? And they had a public meeting too. So like I said, we just have to, they don't need to rush the letter. I'm not saying it's got to be sent out tomorrow. I'm just making a suggestion that we need to start going that way. And then we can get people to start educating and kind of demanding that we need to do this, you know? So that's, I hope I'm not going off base. I'm just trying to get us in a direction where it could work. And your example of the climate task force is exactly right. We could do something that for recycling task force.
So that's interesting that you're saying that, Sal, because I know that at least with the management teams that my colleagues work with on a regular basis, they're frequently talking about youth cleanup projects. And, you know, they're frequently engaged in trash discussions, at least, you know, the ones that I'm familiar with. So maybe we can get some boost from some of those management team folks as well.
Right. Well, we have to start somewhere. So, I mean, you could request it. It could get assigned to a committee. And there's no rush to have it. I will help wherever committee it goes to. And we just... when the time comes, we'll line, Laura knows how, we talk to the chair and we line it up when everybody is able to attend. It's just not forced. We do it correlating with everybody to make sure everybody can attend that meeting when it does happen. And we have the right facts and information that needs to be brought into the conversation. That's where I'm saying, am I making sense? I'm not trying to push anything here, but it's just, we have to start somewhere and it's got to start. I think it needs to start in a public meeting and then go from there. It could always be another public meeting. It doesn't have to end with just one. It could be continued on to get more information that is brought up. That's what I'm getting at.
Yeah. So, you know, the city, the Board of Alders Finance Committee heard testimony on March 30. Concerning the city budget and environmental issues, including the hiring of a sustainability officer. So this would be a good time to bring up an issue that sustainability officer, if that person were to get hired. And I think they brought up the point that the sustainability officer would be hired with grant money. So it would not be direct taxpayer money. So that person could work on this issue. So maybe we could all coalesce into a lot of important people working on this important issue. And I think sounds like a good idea. Is that okay with you, Kathy?
I think it's a good idea. And we need to be not equal to the suburbs. We're a city and we're a whole different ballgame. Yeah. And you're right, we're renters, transit. So when they say what other towns are doing, to be part of them, they're in the single family home residence of where it's a standard family lifestyle and they recycle and they do all the right things. In the city, a lot of people they're scraping just to have a meal. And, you know, I mean, we have such poverty in New Haven. So it's a complicated thing. And I'm not trying to say we're trying to force it on people, but we have too many puzzle pieces. It's not like Madison or Guilford or Reading, Connecticut. I mean, they don't have as many puzzle pieces that we have.
Right. Okay. So Kimmy, I see you have a question, additional item. We usually don't take up issues that are not on our agenda. If it's something, and we usually end at 7, if it's something fast, go ahead. You can mention it and we can discuss it more at a next meeting. What is it?
Okay. Sorry. I didn't realize. Yeah. Just quickly. I was wondering about, the trash cans on Long Wharf Drive. I saw that there was basically there's a lot of trash, and I'm assuming it's because people litter, but also it blows out of the trash cans. And I didn't know whether there was like a movement to try to get like trash cans with lids or something. And I was running by there today and I saw that there was like a couple new ones that were the ones that are in the city with like the door that opens. And so maybe we can talk about that next time.
Dawn, is that something the city is?
Yeah, there is a different trash can that is meant to be installed. I don't know that it's installed yet. And I don't think it's supposed to be a big belly. I think I may have specs on it. So, and we did actually have a student that was looking into other options to even reduce the waste that's produced in the first place, you know, what maybe reusable containers or other such options. So it is, it is a topic on people's radar in terms of knowing that there's a trash issue down there. And there are supposed to be newly installed trash cans. I can follow up on the timeline for those.
Okay. I'll put my email in the chat if you want to let me know.
So I think I either read or heard that South Korea Starbucks is eliminating single use cups and they're substituting reusable ones starting now. So the future may be upon us soon. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yeah. Anybody have anything else we need to talk about? And if we don't have any issues by the time a week from our next meeting comes up, I would be in favor of not meeting in May if we don't have to. I don't know how the rest of you feel about that.
Well, this kind of, I should have mentioned this earlier. I don't know that we, did we send a letter about, there was another piece of legislation about energy efficiency and affordable housing?
We did.
We did? Okay. I just wanted to make sure that that happened. Okay.
Yeah. Remember, I sent it to you after we sent it. What? I can't hear you.
I'm getting old.
Okay. Well, yeah. All right. Does anyone have anything else to discuss?
Nope.
Thank you all for being here, for staying so long. Kevin, you get the last word. Oh, Sal gets, oh, bye. Okay. Bye, all. Thank you so much. Dawn, you'll save the chat. Bye, Florestine. Bye, Iris. Bye, Kathy. Bye.